Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Tuesday. Tuesdays with me. I know that's perfectly cool, perfectly fine. You get John to roll, that's fine. You clicked on the video, you knew what you were gonna get, but you also get Senator Nina Turner. Nina Turner, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, John, as always.
Glad to have you here. We were having a robust conversation before the show, and based on that, I can tell we're both ready to engage with how horrible our politics are. But if we're gonna do that, I am glad that it is you that we're doing that with. So thank you, as always, for being here.
Oh, my pleasure.
And for those of you at home, we've got a lot planned for you over the next 90 minutes or so. So thank you for being here. We're gonna be talking about some of what's at stake in today's elections. It is election day. Did you know that? Well, there's a few big elections that are gonna be decided today. We've got Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin, he just wants to compromise, everyone. Why won't you all be reasonable? And so that'll be fun. We got some of the most blatant corruption I've seen in a long time. Lauren Boebert's been absolutely awful. You got some casual homophobia. It's gonna be fun. We've got Molotov cocktails, very rarely in the news. We're gonna be talking about them today. So there is a lot that we're gonna be going over. But please hit the like button and share the stream before that. And if you have any comments, tweets, questions, super chats, anything about what we talk about over the course of the next 90 minutes, you can send them in. And we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Nina Turner, you ready to talk some politics?
I am ready.
Okay, let's do it. Today is election day. There's a lot that's gonna be decided, but one of the most high profile races has to be Virginia's gubernatorial race, where you have Democrat Terry McAuliffe going up against Republican Glenn Youngkin. And as we approached election day, polls were getting very close. You can see here, this poll, I think it was by Morning Consult, had McAuliffe up just a little bit. But I have heard of other polls even more recently implying that no, Youngkin is actually leading, especially with late deciders. Now, what does that look like? Why is that? Well, he's apparently being fueled, according to the Washington Post, by an 18-point advantage among independent likely voters, up from an 8-point advantage last month, which is a huge swing, obviously. And you should know that although Virginia has been trending blue in the past decade or so, Youngkin has gained momentum in the past few weeks in advertisements and stump speeches about parental involvement in public schools. What does that mean? I mean, we care about education here, and there's a lot of problems with the American education system. I mean, clearly one of the biggest issues is that we don't pay teachers nearly enough to help recruit the best minds and keep them for a long time. Kids don't learn necessary skills like critical thinking, personal finance, things like that. So it's great that they're focusing on education, Nina Turner, except that of course they're not talking about any of that stuff. All this means is stop teaching critical race theory. And I will remind you, they're not. But anyway, Nina, this is what the election has become about. And it looks like it might deliver a Republican victory.
Yeah, the Republicans, unfortunately, are masterful at seizing on to some issue that they make into, that the sky is going to fall, the world is going to come to an end. They are very, very good at that. And the critical race theory is, in this moment, that thing. It'll be something else in 2022, but it's critical race theory right now. And John, as you laid out, parents, you have no fear. Critical race theory is something that is taught in college. It started off on the legal side, law schools, and not just in general studies in college either. So don't you worry. Critical race theory is not being taught. But really what critical race theory is subbing in for, John, is just really telling the truth about this country, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And some of these folks just want to have revisionist history about the founding of this nation. And also what continues to compound equality and justice for all, even right now in the 21st century. Those are two different things, and we need to have the courage as a country to talk about those things. And just whatever is a reality today in terms of the things that we need to change don't have to be the reality tomorrow if we get to work and make sure that we have equality and justice for all.
Yeah. No, you're totally right about the obvious misconceptions about what critical race theory is. We're gonna have a video we're gonna play in a little bit that's gonna demonstrate that really well. So we will turn back to that in a moment, but I also wanna let you know about one other element that has played into or kind of not played into this race, which is Donald Trump. I mean, after all, he just was the president. He's still the leader of the Republican Party, and yet you don't really see a lot of Donald Trump in this race. Over the weekend, Youngkin said he would not be part of a planned Teller rally that Trump planned to headline just last night. He didn't even mention Trump by name. So he is really avoiding identifying himself with Donald Trump. Now, yesterday, Trump released a statement declaring that he and Youngkin, quote, get along very well together and strongly believe in many of the same policies, especially when it comes to the important subject of education. Yes, Donald Trump obviously very strong on education, and by that he means critical race theory, which I will remind you he didn't talk about for the first 3.5 years of his presidency because the right hadn't yet decided it was something you should be terrified about. But for some reason they've been in lockstep on this for so long. But anyway, I do think it's interesting though that this is a high profile race, one of the first high profile races since the 2020 election, since the insurrection and the big lie. And Youngkin, while he wants to be affiliated with all of those completely substance-free culture war rallying cries of the right, doesn't want Donald Trump as a part of it, which I find to be interesting. And I'm kind of wondering what Donald Trump thinks about that, how little interest the candidate has in being seen with him.
Well, Donald Trump is a secret love, make no mistake. So no matter if he's in the background, which clearly he is, this is just a strategy. I don't, you know, knowing President Trump, former President Trump, you know, it pains people to that. I mean, he was the president. You know, his ego, I'm sure his ego is very bruised right now because you know it's all about me when it comes to Mr. Trump. But this is definitely a strategy that the Republican gubernatorial candidate is taking right now. But make no mistake, him and Mr. Trump are dance partners.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be interesting if Youngkin wins, not that it matters, but Donald Trump is going to claim victory. He's going to say that.
Of course he is.
And honestly, maybe he did. I honestly don't know. Who the hell knows what these MAGA people are thinking about. If Youngkin loses, he's definitely going to say that he lost because he didn't embrace Donald Trump. Nothing is tied to anything real. And that's great. But we'll see. Again, you know, it's gotten very close in the past couple of days. It's entirely possible that the Republican could win. By the way, this is one of many elections where, you know, obviously I don't want Youngkin to win, especially when he's not campaigning on literally anything real. But it's not like Terry McAuliffe's my bro. I don't have any vested interest in Terry McAuliffe. I just wish that we had elections that were decided on the Republican has Republican ideas, actual ideas for policy that have meaning, that are verifiable. You can look at their promises and 2 years later, you can decide whether they've actually been making good on them. And the Democrat has Democrat ideas and we can evaluate those. Instead, we're gonna decide it based on critical race theory. And so let's say that Youngkin wins. Well, in a year, he'll be able to claim, you know what, under my watch, critical race theory isn't taught in a single school, but it already wasn't. So this is just, you cannot have a democracy that functions when the things being debated are as fantastical as some rando idea in a Harry Potter book. It doesn't mean anything on the ground. And that is frustrating over and above the results of just one election. Any final thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm very frustrated as well. This is really a damn shame. And just how do we awaken the sleeping giants in this country? No matter how they identify politically, this makes no sense. They always have to vote for the lesser of two evils. And even when you have a competition, you're not really debating the issues that will change material conditions for people in this state, Virginia, or even in this country for that matter. So the American people, Virginians included, they're Americans, duh. But the American people are just really being shortchanged, in my opinion. And this race is just yet one example. And, you know, Jonathan Capehart wrote an article in the headlines, I have it in front of me right now, opinion. Black people save the Republic by saving Virginia again. Mm-hmm. And the entire premise of the article is that the Black community is going to have to come through. And I'm sure you've been seeing, like I am, that you know there's some nervousness about whether or not the Black community is actually going to show up and save this country yet again through Virginia. So we will see what's going to happen. We'll know today.
Yeah, and by the way, think about how much easier, like it wouldn't have anything to do with Terry McAuliffe, but think about how much easier it would be for him to run if the Democrats had been delivering on their promises all year. Like I don't care about Terry McAuliffe, but it also is a pretty bad situation to be in where we gave the Democrats power, they're not doing anything with it, Is it rational to be mad at Terry McAuliffe? I don't know for sure, but I get it. I'm not surprised by it. And so Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, also people like Joe Biden, if he loses, this kind of has something to do with you. I know that they're already trying to say that it has to do with progressives for blocking. What are you talking about? The progressives would have signed on to the plan 3 months ago if Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema hadn't kept like using a Ouija board to figure out what thing they're gonna strip out next. That's but anyway, right. We're not gonna, here at least, we're not gonna allow that nonsense talking point.
That's right. Okay. That's exactly right. Deliver for the American people, and then your candidates who are running as Democrats in the states will have something to say about what has been accomplished. And just one more point on this, I know we're wrapping this up, but how about the For the People Act? How about the John Lewis Voting Rights Act? I mean, you can't be out, I mean, how insane is it to beg people, please vote, please vote, please vote, yet on the national level, and you're right, should Terry McAuliffe necessarily be blamed for this? Not directly, but indirectly, yeah, him and others who are running under the Democratic mantle who don't have the courage to stand up to this party. However, meanwhile, back in Washington though, you don't pass the For the People Act, you can't get the John Lewis Voting Rights Act passed, you don't pass the George Floyd Policing Act. I mean, come on, really? So it is a rational decision, even if I don't necessarily agree with it, for people to stand up and say, I don't know, I don't think so.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. But do the student loan cancellation. Do something.
Do something.
Some sign, yes, that you actually care. Okay, well, I want to engage a little bit more with what this race is potentially being decided on, and God knows what the midterms will be. So we're gonna jump into a video right here. This is from The Good Liars interviewing a Virginia voter about the important issues that the election will be decided on.
Important issue in the governor's race here in Virginia.
Getting back to the basics of teaching children, not teaching them critical race theory.
And what is critical race theory?
Well, I'm not gonna get into the specifics of it because I don't understand it that much, but it's something that I don't, what little bit that I know, I don't care for.
And what have you heard that you don't,
well,
that you
I'm
don't
not,
like?
Well, I'm not gonna, I don't have that much knowledge on it, but okay, it's something that I'm not, that I don't care for.
So nothing. He's got absolutely nothing. And look, that's one old man. I kind of feel for him a little bit. And you know, like it seems like he's got some, you know, racialist ideas and everything. But I do feel for, he is out there trying to live his life, and he has been thrown into an ocean of propaganda, and he has been terrified by everyone that he trusts in media about a thing for months and months and months. And he comes out of it deciding his vote based on it, and he has absolutely no idea what it is, despite it being talked about nonstop on Fox and every one of the independent right-wing media outlets. He still has no idea what it is that has him so terrified. And I'm sure maybe some other voters could give a little bit better of an accounting of what it is or why they're scared of it. But that is, I think, a microcosm of what our politics has become. An entire election could turn on something that people don't even understand, but they know that they're supposed to be scared about it, Nina.
Yeah, and at least he told the truth. You know, he was honest about it. Look, I don't know much, but what I've heard, I don't like. And what has, it's been a scare tactic that has been used by the right and is being used very successfully, I might add. And this really does boil down to this whole notion that it is somehow un-American or unpatriotic to really teach the truth. Separate, I'm taking critical race theory out of it because it is not being taught in schools. It is barely being taught in college. It's a very specialized issue. Everybody that goes to college is not learning about even critical race theory. However, this really boils down to race, to racism, to anti-blackness, and then all the other isms that go with it. And somehow this, as Fox is painting these right wingers, that somehow, you know, these big mean Democrats are trying to make white people feel bad about being white, or they're trying to make our white children feel bad. No, that is not the case. That is not happening in schools. And what is going to happen though, because of this, is that now what's being challenged is just teaching American history. You know, just teaching Black history, which is American history. Part of American history is stole the land from the Native Americans. Let's go ahead and start with that and put that out there. It's real. The enslavement of Africans, generation after generation, that's out there. You know, women once upon a time didn't have the right to vote. Our gay, lesbian, transgender sisters and brothers, family and friends didn't have the right to marry. I mean, you name it. Labor. Yeah. It's all kinds of things that might not sit well with this fantasy about America exceptionalism and this misnomer that just because the framers wrote all men are created equal did not mean at the damn time that they wrote it that all men were created equal, because they were not. They really meant all white, land-owning, wealthy-ass men are created equal. We want to tell the truth about it. And then they started to expand out even more and more to give more power to one group over another. So let's go and tell, what's wrong with telling that truth? Y'all don't understand why they running from that. And that's not critical race theory. They don't even know what the hell they're talking about.
Exactly. It is just, there are a lot of inconvenient truths out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they are terrified of the truth. That's all it is. And by the way, some of this seems new. They call it CRT, even though they don't know what that is. It's exactly the same as, you know, like when people were talking about white privilege and trying to get white people to understand their privilege, they were terrified of that. They could not engage with it. They ran from it, calling it something that it's not. They are very, very scared. And for that reason, very, very weak. And they don't like being scared. And so this movement reassures them. We're not going to allow you to experience one iota of cognitive dissonance, not a bit of stress over what has been done historically or what you should think about it or what should change in the future. We will shield you from that. We will create a safe space the size of America for you to hide from the truth on. And we will cancel whatever teachers or whatever books we need to produce that. And all the while, we're gonna talk about how safe spaces are bad and cancel culture is the worst. I would be much more fine with what they're doing if they would at least admit what it is. But they won't do that. And in the end, what you saw there, like just, you know, critical race theory is bad and all that, that's not the extent of where they go. It actually goes to even worse, darker places. Take a look at this. This is Tucker Carlson talking about critical race theory specifically in the context of the Virginia election.
Well, exactly. Nicely put. I mean, these ideas aren't just annoying, they're poison. And they end with Rwanda. And anyone who thinks it through understands that. If you wanted to unite the country, which badly needs to be united, you would emphasize our equality of value. We may be different in many ways, and we are, but we are all worth the same, period. And anyone who doesn't believe that should not be within 100 yards of power ever.
Okay, so teaching critical race theory, which they don't, will lead to Rwanda. This is a point that, look, Tucker Carlson as a person is very impressed with basically everything that he says and does, but he's very impressed with himself about this particular point. And I know that because he also made this point back in June, just about anti-white fervor in general. This wasn't about critical race theory. This is just in general, they're anti-white and thus America will become Rwanda. But actually, he was also saying it way back in 2018. He said that the Democrats are just being like the Hutu of Rwanda. He is very, very impressed with himself. But again, let's be very clear about what he means here. He is never saying it explicitly, but all he means is they will come for white people. They will rampage through the streets. They will kill you and your beautiful white family. That is a message that he has been consistently spreading for at least 3 years at this point.
There it is. And I mean, and he's talking about bringing the country together. The venom that he spews night after night is in no way bringing the country together. And that's such a bizarre comparison for somebody to make. Look, all of us, not each and every one of us, from the Tucker Carsons to just the everyday person in neighborhoods, in the hoods and neighborhoods all across this country, have an obligation. And what is that obligation? That we come to an understanding. James Baldwin once talked about how not everything that we face can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced. And there is nothing wrong with facing in this very moment the very real deep-seated challenges that we have as a nation that are rooted in race, and they're rooted in class, and sometimes they're rooted in gender or sexual identity or religion. That is real because humanity is complex. And just as humanity can be incredibly wonderful and beautiful and loving to each other, we can be incredibly brutal and evil and toxic and manipulative and use systems to hold certain people down. And let me tell you something, Tucker Carlson and the people who believe in him are in a fantasy world if they want to continue to rewrite history. At the time of the founding of this country, whole folks were enslaved. Hello. At the time of the founding of this country, the indigenous people of this land, their land had been stolen. You want to talk about genocide? They died by the hundreds of thousands, even millions, at the hands of European settlers. And we're about to celebrate Thanksgiving this month, John. Let's go on and tell the truth about it. Yeah. And somehow that kind of truth upset these people so that they manipulate and then they fear monger. And then there are some people wired, more wired and predisposed to believe it's what you just said, John. They come in for your stuff. Well, what about the stuff that they already stole from other folks? Jesus, yep. Why can't we have that truth? You know, somebody said, I don't know whose quote this is, but it was, they better be happy that Black people want justice and not revenge. Mm-hmm. That's real. And any other, you know, that kind of oppression. But to stoke people up like that and not be willing as a leader, as somebody that has the kind of following he has, and he's talking about power and the kind of power he has, and he wants to continue to stoke up fear and paint other people as the other. It's really shameful what Chuck Tucker is doing. It's beyond that, but it's a family show. But he knows exactly what he's doing, John. He's doing it for ratings. Yeah. He's doing it for money. He has very high ratings, has a lot of followers. And God knows, hey, the money definitely is flowing in on that show.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. And he's doing it for his own financial gain, but in a larger sense, he is doing it to protect billionaires, to protect those who are already in power. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they are weaponizing conservatives to win elections, but it's not the conservatives that are gaining power. It's not, because those conservative voters have actual issues that will never be solved if they get the politicians that they support. Effectively, this is a war to keep us out of power on the left, definitely, but to create apathetic conservatives, conservatives who will never push for politicians who will actually improve the quality of their lives. They have been effectively pushed out of politics because you made the great point, and you referenced Baldwin there about, you know, you can't solve something until you face it. They have an easier job than we do in that they're not asking their voters to face anything. We are. That's difficult. Right. That is a difficult path that we have to face. But they don't have to ask them to face anything because they don't want to change anything. The voters should. It's in their economic interest to change things. But those in power do not. The billionaires are doing just fine. They don't need any reckoning with their history. The history did well by them. That's how they got their billions. And so we have to overcome all of that and get people to do the difficult work of understanding how they're being manipulated and the history of our country. And that is a very difficult thing. I don't have a solution to that right now, but we do have to figure that out. We can't just defeat a talking point about critical race theory, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. These people don't actually know what they're talking about, and they really don't care either. What we have to do is wake them up, not just about, you know, the history of the United States, structural racism and all that, but about the fact that they are being manipulated every day by people who do not share their interests, that use them as pawns to maintain the status quo. And that is a lot to get people to wake up to. And I honestly don't know how we go about doing that, especially in the short term. But I feel like we're never gonna have any sort of progress until we do that.
Yeah, I agree with you, John. Maybe one good start, and this is hard work. I mean, this is really gut-wrenching hard work, and as much progress as certainly I must admit that we have made as a country, we still have to deal with the structures. And that is really a harder lift. But one thing, you know, looking at the strikes that are going on across the country and how those really are, you know, multi-generational, multi-racial, the coming together of working class people standing up for their rights, whether it's, you know, John Deere or fighting against, you know, Kellogg, just to see, you know, what Amazon folks trying to come together to unionize. To me, there's something there that I believe we can cut across the political spectrum, because the people who work at those kinds of facilities, the working class people, they are Black, they are white, they are Latinx, they are Asian, you know, they are everybody in between. That might be it, John, that we bring, you know, in a stronger way in the 21st century, the whole notion of labor and civil rights movement merging together.
Yeah. And I think that it would be really helped along by actually having some successes in terms of legislation. Like, people do not believe that the government can deliver for them, and they believe that because it basically never does. That's we right. have to break through and show what can happen when the government actually does care. And unfortunately, the defenders of the billionaires, the mansions and the cinemas, virtually every other Democrat and every other Republican have made that an almost impossible obstacle to get past, to actually deliver in even the most minimal way on promises that got them elected.
So true. I mean, we haven't even passed the PRO Act yet, you know, speaking of labor.
Yeah. And that's one thing that supposedly Manchin's actually in favor of. We'll see if that actually produces it or makes it get passed. I also want to remind you, by the way, if you are living in Buffalo, New York, India Walton in a race, totally, but like the exact parameters of it, needless that we're going through this at this point. She won effectively, but they are all arrayed against her, just like we were just talking about. In the case of India Walton, we interviewed her on the show if you want to find that video, but there's Bernie Sanders encouraging people to go and vote. Polls are open until 9:06 our time. Okay, with that, we do have to go to our first break, but we'll be back with much more in just a few. I hate our politics. I really do. I was thinking as we were talking about this before, Nina, it's like, my instinct is to say that they've produced sheep on the right, but they haven't really, because sheep are just apathetic, and apathy leaves you open to someone fighting your apathy. They need something stronger and more aggressive than that. They have not produced sheep. They have produced piranha. And what they do is they throw little tidbits to them and they go mad and they tear every bit of flesh off the bones and don't realize that the one throwing them that little tidbit is sitting at a table that is about to collapse under all the food they have. And we have to fight back against that, and it's very hard. It is kind of like, if someone's apathetic, you can give them something to be passionate about. But it is hard to convince someone that what they're passionate about is opportunistic nonsense that billionaires have fed to them to protect the status quo. That's very difficult. We got to figure out some sort of way.
Yeah, we do. We're going to keep trying. We're not going to give up. I mean, that is really what they, being the corporatist wings of both parties, they really want us to give up on the good fight. But you're right, piranhas, that is really a good way of putting it.
We need you in office. That's what we need. We need to work on that. There's your homework, America, for the day. Anyway, oh no, I was already kind of in a bad mood and then I saw what the B block is. Okay, play the video.
Well, I've worked hard to find a path to compromise. It's obvious. Compromise is not good enough for a lot of my colleagues in Congress. It's all or nothing. And their position doesn't seem to change unless we agree to everything. Enough is enough.
Are you kidding me, Joe Manchin? I mean, look, he knows what he's doing. He is trying to needle you. He is poking you. He's spitting in your face. Manchin says compromise isn't good enough for some of my comrades there. He's saying progressives, Nina Turner. He's saying progressives aren't okay with compromise. They have given literally trillions upon trillions of dollars for a guy who got into office with the vote of about 0.1% of the US population, but they're the ones that aren't okay with compromise.
Yeah, you talk about don't look at the man behind the curtain. That's what that speech was. I mean, it truly, truly was the gall. He has lots of it. They want it all. So standing up to say that we need to expand Medicare is about wanting it all. And even just saying Can we make sure that the elders who have it right now get hearing aids and vision and dental? That's wanting it all. Making sure that we have 2 year, that we make 2 year college free in this country. That's about having it all. Making sure that people have paid family leave. That's about having it all. The man is mad. Okay, there is no other way to describe his condition. It is madness at its worst. He represents one of the poorest states in the United States of America. And the last time I checked, there are poor, working poor, and barely middle class people that live in that state. John, these people cannot be shamed, because if he was ashamed, he wouldn't have dare walked up to any microphone to spew that BS he was just talking. So again, it's the man behind the curtain that he's doing. And it's really shameful that President Manchin, because that's what he is, because everything so far has been to his will, John. I mean, tell me what hasn't he gotten that he wanted? And now he wants them to slow down. Now that they are going to pass that bipartisan infrastructure bill, he got the nerve to tell them to slow down on everything else, because he got to get an understanding. Man, you ain't been seeking understanding for the last 8 months?
Yep. No, and he's talking about compromise. It is so clear. He is just trying to kill the reconciliation bill. That's all that he's trying to do. Don't talk to me about compromise. And look, it's such a weird, like, I'm almost happy that he is at least speaking on video about what he wants, because for months and months they refused to do this. But it's not like he's really speaking to his constituents. We are in such an unrepresentative democracy that he, just by his very nature, doesn't represent them. This is an incredibly wealthy guy, literally owns a coal company. How he can get elected in West Virginia boggles my mind. But now he's there. He's probably never going to be taken out, and he knows that full well. He will leave when he is good and ready to leave and go join some corporate board and make even more millions of dollars every year than he does now. But along the way, he is going to do as much damage as possible. It is insane that we have a system where one guy who doesn't give a damn can keep trillions in dollars of aid from the American people. But that is the system we have, and that's not enough for him. The injury is the trillions of dollars. The insult is him spitting on your face with that video right there, talking about compromise. Talking about compromise.
There it is. Again, masterful. I mean, he sounds just like a Republican.
Yeah, weird. Yeah. It's the first time ever for him to sound like that. Anyway,
right, how that worked. Yeah,
he says a bunch of other nonsense, blah, blah, blah. It's consequential on our national debt. By the way, they scored the bipartisan bill, and it adds $250 billion to the deficit. He was asked about that. He's like, well, no, I mean, but it like makes jobs and like stuff like that. Oh, okay. So it's fine when the one that you like, that's like in favor of corporations and helps privatize some public land, that one can add to the deficit. But for some reason with the reconciliation one, if it involves your granddad getting new teeth, suddenly that costs something. We can't have that. And there's a bunch of other nonsense. Anyway, I want to get to Cori Bush and what she had to say about that, because I value her words about a billion times more than Joe Manchin's. She said Joe Manchin's opposition to the Build Back Better Act is anti-black, anti-child, anti-woman, and anti-immigrant. When we talk about transformative change, we are talking about a bill that will benefit black, brown, and indigenous communities. Those same communities are overwhelmingly excluded from the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We cannot leave anyone behind. And she's right, but that's the direction they're moving in. It feels almost inevitable at this point, like it was always going to move in that direction. And I hope to jump ahead. Ilhan Omar says they're not like reneging on their promise to do both bills together. It seemed yesterday like they were. Now she's saying that they're not going to. I like Ilhan Omar. Ilhan Omar is also not in charge, so God only knows what's going to end up happening. It might come, Representative Omar, it might come to you having to vote against it then. Because again, it's not up to you necessarily when they do the vote. But Nina, what do you think at this point? I mean, you've been watching some of what they've been saying. Do you think that they will hold to that it's both bills or nothing?
I don't know. I mean, I hope Congresswoman Ilhan Omar is right. Definitely love. I mean, Congresswoman Cori Bush is laying it out there like it is. No holds barred, just telling the absolute truth about who is going to be impacted, who continues to bear the brunt of systemic failures in this country. So I'm so glad that she just laid it out. She didn't make nice with it. She just put it out there for all to see. It's crystal clear. John, I do not know. I do sincerely hope that the progressives hold the line. You got to get something for your vote. Why is it that Shadow President Joe Manchin and Shadow Vice President Sinema get to run everything, and then they change spots depending on what the day is and what the issue is? Why do those two get to dictate the future of this country? And these two extraordinary bills that would do so much to lift people and change the material conditions that we talked about, a material condition, being able to get a hearing aid, going to the dentist, dealing with your vision, making sure you have paid family leave, all of those things that are in, you know, making sure the child tax credit is extended beyond a year. I mean, what in the world is happening? I just don't get it. And if the overwhelming majority of Democrats are for these things, as we are being told, then what gives? That's the question I won't answer, John.
Well, what gives is our democracy, I guess.
I just don't know. So I do really do want the progressives to hold the line, or at least get something, get some stuff done by executive order or something, so you can stand before the people and say, I voted for this watered down nonsense, even though it has some good things in it, because we do have to admit that. But see, that's how they get us. They always want to get us right there. It has some good things in it. That bill, for the moment we are in, that bill is really inadequate. And both things can be true at the same time, John. Am I right? Both things can be true.
Totally.
That there are some good things in it, and that it is both inadequate for this moment.
Yeah.
That is the moral of the story right now. So if Democrats are in control and they want to do all of these wonderful things that the American people deserve, then why do we allow two people? You know what? Because there's more than two people. The others are hiding behind these two people.
Definitely. Definitely. No, you're totally right. You're totally
right. Got me worked up on this one, John.
You have. And also, the hour has been flying by. How is it the 40-minute mark already? Okay, well, we got to go to our second break. When we come back, we've got some of the most blatant, obvious corruption that I can remember. We've got that after this. I did not expect that this would be a rundown, that we would be running so far behind on, but there's just so much to say. And with that, let's jump into this. We allow our elected representatives to own individual stocks, and we thereby allow them to use the private information they have to benefit themselves as well as others. It's a horrible decision, and I want to show you how it works in practice. So, Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina dumped more than $1.6 million in stocks back in February 2020, a week before the entire market fell apart, dipping more than 30% in a matter of just weeks. After he did that, he called his brother-in-law, according to a new SEC filing. According to the SEC, he had material non-public information regarding the incoming economic impact of coronavirus. And it's not difficult to understand how he's going to these briefings. He's getting a better idea than we get to have early on of how bad things are going to be. And so after he sold $1.6 million in stock, he called his brother-in-law. They talked for 50 seconds, which sounds like the perfect phone call to me, and also the perfect amount of time to tell someone to panic, which the brother-in-law did. Gerald Fouth immediately called his broker 1 minute later. Actually, to be fair, he called his broker and his broker didn't answer, so he called a different broker and immediately began selling stock too. He sold between $97,000 and $280,000 worth of shares in six companies, including companies that were hit incredibly hard during the market turndown. Now, we had previously learned that Fouth dumped stock, according to ProPublica, who's doing great reporting on this, on the same day as Burr. But this is the first we knew that he did so immediately after talking to Burr on the phone. Now, granted, his corruption is more limited than Burr's because he's a bit more broke. He can only sell a quarter million, apparently. Burr sold 1.6 million. And you know, it was hilarious about it. The corruption is not just that he used the information he had to benefit himself. He wanted to make sure that the conditions were ripe for his stock to be sold at a high price, which is why he did things like on February 7th, he wrote an op-ed saying the United States today is better prepared than ever before to face emerging public health threats like the coronavirus. And as soon as he put down his pen, he began panicking because he didn't believe a damn thing about it. That same month, in fact, he went to a VIP group dinner at a social club And he gave them a preview of what the coronavirus would do. And he said it's going to curtail business travel, cause schools to be closed, and result in the military mobilizing to compensate for overwhelmed hospitals. So Nina Turner, isn't it amazing what we let them do? They get secret information and they can personally benefit and then lie to us, even if it causes us financial harm, if that's what it takes to benefit them.
Yeah, it must be nice. All of that rare air that they're breathing up there. I mean, you don't have to be an economist. You don't even have to be a genius to see the breadcrumbs forming in this saga here that happens over and over and over again. This dude was so blatant with it. And you know why they're so blatant with it? Because they know what we know, that in the end of the day, ain't jack gonna happen to these people. Nothing. Their constituents are not gonna be mad as hell about it. The rules are not gonna change. So they're just gonna skate by with people like you and me talking about the issue, great reporters reporting on it, and nothing of substance really happening to hold these people accountable. They should not be able, it's insider training, just plain and simple.
Yeah, 100%, and we allow it.
Yeah, we do.
We allow them. And great job by ProPublica, as you said, yeah. What's gonna happen? Well, they don't even need to pretend like this wasn't corrupt. Burr's spokesperson didn't respond to questions from ProPublica. Fouth's lawyer and the SEC didn't answer questions. Fouth actually hung up on a ProPublica reporter. So they seem pretty confident that they can just dodge this thing and they'll be perfectly fine. And why not? I mean, the worst thing that happened to, what was it, to Loeffler and who's the other Georgia senator? I'm blanking on his name right now. But both of them did the same thing with coronavirus stocks. Now, thankfully, they at least lost re-election. They're not in jail right now for what they did. And this is not specific to just a few. Previous reporting they did in the Atlantic, the Atlantic reported on an analysis of over 60,000 stock trades made between 2004 and 2010. And what they found was politicians outperformed the market by 20%, with the portfolios of high-ranking Republicans beating the market by 35%. That is a massive, like you cannot stress how big of an advantage that has. And you can explain that in a couple different ways. It was Purdue, thank you. You can explain it a couple different ways. Maybe they're just way smarter than us on average, but I don't know. I've listened to a lot of these politicians speak. That doesn't bear out. Or maybe they're regularly using the information they have to personally profit, passing legislation or not passing legislation to benefit or hurt certain industries that will benefit them. And we allow all of this, and I do not understand it. Why are people not more incensed about this?
I mean, people are going through so much, John, they can barely concentrate on their own pain. That really is what this comes down to. And then not having responsible folks who can do more than concentrate on pain because they're doing very well to hold people like this accountable. The system does not hold them accountable. Their colleagues don't hold them accountable. And so we are going to have to elect more people. Again, it always comes back to elections. More people who are absolutely willing to put forth the rules to change the system so that we minimize behavior like this. That's what we need to do. But again, it's circular, it's all connected. You know, you got to get people to vote. Well, no, people don't feel motivated, but I mean, you know where I'm going with this, and I think our viewers do too. Yeah. I mean, it's frustrating as hell. I still say we don't give up on making sure that we get some reforms, even in our anger and distrust. Basically for now doesn't look like anything is going to change.
Yeah. And look, there have been times when corruption, you know, concerns about corruption got people to vote. There was a couple midterms ago that was a big sort of rallying thing. The issue is that the corruption stories that the media seems to allow to really get out there and get talked about a lot are like Duke Cunningham. Or like, you know, it's a bag of money being handed from under one stall from another. It's these very specific things that are outside of the bounds of what the politicians have allowed. And I want people to understand that something being legal doesn't make it not corrupt, doesn't make it ethical just because corrupt politicians said you can do it. And it's so much of what is perfectly legal to do that we need to change. And there are actually proposals on how we could do this. One option would be to require members of Congress, their household, and their staff to sell individual equities and instead to put their money in things like index funds and diversified mutual funds. The idea being they can still be invested in the growth of the American economy, but they shouldn't have a single stock that they can then look at decisions they make as a politician and say, how will this impact this particular stock? That seems like an absolute bare minimum, that at least. You could also have them put their holdings into a blind trust. I haven't had a lot of faith in that based on some of the blind trusts I've heard about from some politicians though. And then there's other things like divesting from your assets while you're in office. That would be a harder sell. I'm personally fine with politicians having no reason to believe they will ever become wealthy off of their public service. I don't think that that's too much to ask. And honestly, if it weeds out some people who are only getting in it to get rich, I think that would be kind of a nice little side effect there. But at the very least, make them invest in just mutual funds and things like that and not purchase individual stocks that they can then manipulate. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that certainly is a fair compromise here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We're trying to push forward. Some politicians are. Okay, we are going to end the hour with one of the craziest videos I've seen. Let's jump right into this. What you're seeing there is a Molotov cocktail attack at a shop on Nostrand Avenue right there in Brooklyn Deli. And you're seeing people fleeing from it. There's a very good chance that many of you watching this have seen this video going around on social media because you do not see things like this happening. And in fact, eventually a second angle of the attack was done. And while it is horrendous, there is one kind of little surprising bright spot here. There you see the man, this is Joel Mengel, and you see another man stop him from throwing a second Molotov cocktail into the shop. You see him walking back. He seems to be trying to put out the fire before it can reach that car that's parked out front, but he risks injury or death possibly there. And he in fact does get some, like he's on fire briefly in that. This is horrendous. The man has been arrested who threw the Molotov cocktails. One person received medical treatment for non-life-threatening injuries. He's gonna face charges now, but it's absolutely horrendous footage. But it is amazing to see someone willing to do that though, Nina. I can't imagine I would run towards the guy with the Molotov cocktail.
Yeah, thank God for the person that did. I mean, this is crazy what they just did, putting everybody's life in danger, even their own, to do something like that in that deli. But thank God for that person. He is definitely a hero.
Yeah, hero. And as of right now, at least, I tried to find out a little bit about the identity of the person that did it, and I so far haven't been able to find it. I hope that, you know, they come forward. They deserve to be recognized for what they did, especially when, like, if you look at the two videos that we saw, the first cocktail is thrown in, ignites. Shortly thereafter, you have a guy jump. He falls on the floor. He's on fire at that point. And then eventually, he and another man run out of the shop. That second cocktail, it is entirely possible that that would have hit one of those two people. Sure. And thankfully, it was non-life-threatening injuries. If that second one had gone in there, you might well have had one or two deaths. And that's so true. That individual, he potentially saved lives that we don't even know who it is.
No, he did. And the good Samaritan that he is, I mean, it looks like he has a cup in his hand, in one hand.
Yeah.
So he did that with one hand. Exactly. Didn't miss a beat. He kept that cup in his hand.
Exactly. Yeah. He's just like, wait, what? You're not going to really. Okay.
Right.
It's what we hope that we would do. Most of us never have that opportunity, but we need people like that. So, you know, thank you to him. And Joel Mengel faces charges of arson, assault, reckless endangerment, criminal possession of a weapon, and criminal mischief. I have no idea at this point. Exactly. I don't know what caused the attack. But thankfully and hopefully they'll be able to repair the damage to the individual shop.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, that's all the Nina Turner we have for today's show. But as always, Senator, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, John. My pleasure. Until next week. More Turner time next week.
More Turner time. And also Power Hour. Don't forget about Power Hour, available to the members on Thursdays. And you should definitely be staying tuned to the podcast. Excerpts of that go up on Mondays. So again, thank you and have a good one.
Thank you. You as well.
Awesome. For those of you watching, the show isn't over though. Yeah, it's slightly less exciting. I will grant you that now that it's just me. But don't go anywhere. You signed up for this. You knew you'd see me. Now you're just gonna see slightly more. Anyway, that's all for the first hour, but we do have more stories. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube or the members app, we got more coming at you. Lauren Boebert being horrendous and making herself look ridiculous. You know you don't wanna miss that. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.